Canadian. Beneath the Surface will be back next week at 10 a.m. Stay with us.
Rolling suicide.
Serge Tankian is best known as the lead singer of the Grammy Award-winning rock band System of a Down, but he's also a solo artist, composer, activist, painter, poet, and filmmaker. Since launching onto the rock scene in 1993, he's performed for millions of fans and sold more than 42 million albums worldwide. He's also a proud Armenian-American and a dedicated activist. Along with Tom Morello, Tankian co-founded the nonprofit organization Axis of Justice, which strives to bring together musicians, music fans, and grassroots political organizations to fight for social justice. He has composed scores for many films and television series, had his paintings exhibited in galleries in the U.S. and New Zealand, and released two books of his own poetry. He has also been an executive producer on multiple documentaries. His new book, Down with the System, a memoir of sorts, is being released May 14, 2024. It's an exhilarating, thoughtful, and beautifully written debut memoir by musician, songwriter, and lead singer-lyricist of Grammy Award-winning metal band System of a Down, Serge Tankian. Serge, welcome back to KPFK.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Why have you said System of a Down was as unlikely a chart topper as had ever existed in modern music history?
Well, if you saw us opening up for Slayer in 1997, you would understand. You know, we were a ragtag group of like these really heavy metal slash punk rock guys that were donning this weird makeup and making funny noise and faces, playing our songs at like an intensity and fast rhythm and tempo. And, you know, it wasn't what you would hear on the radio, not remotely close to what you would hear on the radio. So that's kind of why I said that.
And we began the hour with Chop Suey, your first single from the second album, Toxicity, released in 2001. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. Now, my producer says he discovered how popular your band was when he saw a line of people stretching down Brand Boulevard and around the block. When he asked someone in line what they were waiting for, he was told for System of a Down tickets. When did you first begin to realize that System of a Down was becoming such an unlikely sensation?
That's a good question. You know, because we were the type of band who didn't have a radio hit on our first record, we were touring a lot. We did Ozfest, we opened for Slayer in the US and in Europe, and we did a good 2 years of, you know, hard touring as soon as we made our first record. And the way that we started is we had this cool warehouse that I had rented. I had a software company at the time. I had my offices in there, little living space, and I had made room for the band to have a rehearsal space. So that was kind of our spot. It was an industrial area of North Hollywood, right off of Sherman Way. And, you know, we'd play our songs, we'd write our songs, and then we'd test them out on our friends. And slowly those friends became 75 to 100, 150 people coming to this warehouse every, you know, 2 weeks or so, and throwing keg parties and having a good time. It was in the middle of nowhere, so there were no homes nearby, and so we could make music as loud and as late as we'd like. So it started with that, a very organic kind of outgrowth of our music. And then we hit the club scene and started playing at the Roxy and Whiskey and Troubadour and all the likely places, and slowly started to gain this popularity and momentum as a local band. And it was beautiful because that's why labels started paying attention. They weren't paying attention for any other reason than people were talking about it.
And who is the record producer who said of System of a Down, they were my favorite band, but I didn't think anyone was going to like them apart from a small, like-minded group of people like me who were crazy. and how he eventually signed you to a contract on his record label.
That was Rick Rubin, you know, who produced all our records, and he was also our label head on American Recordings. And yeah, he really loved the band and what we were doing. I think he got it, you know. A lot of record companies were interested because other people were interested, or, you know, they were seeing that there was something special in the band, but no one could put their finger on it. And with Rick, it was more like, I know what these guys are doing. You know, I don't know how popular they'll be, but this is something that I need to be a part of because it's special. And the trust that he was given by a major label at the time, which was his new partnership with Sony Columbia, really worked out for the band because of him, they had more trust in us to let us kind of tour and spend money touring. Whereas without that kind of trust, they might have dropped us after a year of touring, for example. You know, they had the confidence to stay in the game longer, and obviously it paid off for them. So that's very interesting. Yeah.
The story of System of a Down would be remarkable in and of itself, but your journey in life makes it even more amazing. You were born to Armenian parents in Beirut. Tell us about your neighborhood described in your book and why your family eventually had to leave Beirut.
We were in a neighborhood of Beirut called Eshrefiye, and my grandparents lived down the street. We lived in an apartment on the first floor. We had this little backyard, and, you know, that's where we grew up. I was, I think, about seven when we migrated to the U.S. at the beginning of the Lebanese Civil War. I don't have that many memories except for kind of local places and, you know, my school that I went to. I went to an Armenian school in Beirut, and I remember my school. You know, I was young, so my memories are not that many. But I do remember when the war started, because I remember crouching in our bedroom with my little brother and hearing bombs fall, and that kind of randomness of fear of not knowing where the bombs are going to fall. Schools were closed, and we were lucky because we got out of there at the beginning of the Lebanese Civil War. My parents were working on immigrating to the U.S. far before the war had started. So, you know, we were one of the lucky ones to get out early. I have many friends who actually stayed throughout the whole war and whatnot. And it's just a very strange life when war lasts so long and you become desensitized to it. You know, I've seen a lot of people that I would call friends in Lebanon and go, I heard there was a bomb that went off near where you are. Is everyone okay? You know, that kind of stuff. And they'd be like, oh yeah, no, it's on the other side of town. I mean, we're talking about a mile and a half away, maybe. Like, it's just like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They're just like so decent. They're like, fine. That was just, you know, it's all good. You know, just people are so resilient that you can even be desensitized to war, which is the craziest thing to think of.
So tell us what you meant when in chapter 4 you wrote that you discovered in retrospect that when you're born elsewhere, America isn't so much a place as it is an idea.
Yeah, what I mean is that American culture basically spread through films and music and TV and, you know, American pop culture through products and different things. It has this gleam. It's like a commercial. You know, the reality, of course, is always different than what you see on the surface. But one thing special about America is that kind of energy that anything can work, anything can happen, can do spirit. You know, I think that's what I was referring to, Maggie.
So tell us a little bit about how you met the guys, Darren, Shavo, and Andy, and you began playing music together, and you had a band called Soil.
So before Soil, I was in a band called Forever Young. I was playing keyboards for this band with a bunch of friends. And we were sharing space with another band of friends, sharing rehearsal space. And they had brought in Darren as their, guitarist as their lead guitarist, and he also sang. And him and I started just hanging out because both of us were really serious about music, and a lot of the guys were playing for fun, I would say, you know, which is fair enough. And him and I kind of hit it off, and we started a band called Soil with another friend of ours called Dave and a drummer named Domingo, who had come from Hawaii. And Soil lasted for about 8 months. We played one show. It was a very heavy, progressive band. It was my first time as a lead singer of a band. And it was the broth in which System of a Down songs were cooked in, I would always say, because it was an earlier version of what we eventually established as System of a Down. And once our drummer had to leave town and go back to Hawaii, we decided to create a new band. And that's when we started System of a Down and got our friend Shavo and Andy involved. Shavo playing bass and Andy on drums. And then eventually Andy was replaced by John Del Mayo, our current drummer.
Let's take a short musical break. I've got a nice list of picks from you, Serge, and we're going to take this break with Eagle Brain. You want to talk for a moment about it?
Sure. It's a beautiful ballady type of song from Steal This Album. I remember playing an Indian guitar on it, and it's got a theremin from, if my memory serves me correctly, and it's one of the songs that I wrote for the record. I hope you enjoy it.
System of a Down.
Life is but a dream, drifting on a stream, Consciously it seems, all of what remains. Ego brain.
Here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. And my name is Maggie LaPeak, and my very special guest for this hour is the amazing musician, songwriter, and lead singer, lyricist of Grammy Award-winning metal band System of a Down, Serge Tankian. We are discussing his memoir of sorts, which is interesting, Down with the System. And Serge, you write in your book that you were an activist long before you were an artist. How did that activism manifest itself in the lyrics you came up with?
Well, when you're an activist before becoming an artist, anything that you do involves your activism. So your art becomes an extension of your activism, right? So, I mean, I had a lot of different types of lyrics, stream of consciousness and political lyrics, different types of personal stories and things that you experience as an artist. And they all kind of work their way into music, because when you're working on a song and you're looking for inspiration in terms of lyrics, you kind of go to your notebooks and look in and see what kind of matches the vibe of what you're trying to express and what words would work. So usually I use them as resources. And because some of my writings were political, they work themselves naturally into the lyrics. And it's also the type of music. You know, when we're talking about rock and metal, it is the kind of flag-bearing music of revolt, right? So it worked perfectly into the kind of songs.
So what was your promise to your grandfather?
Before my grandfather died, my grandfather Stepan was a survivor of the Armenian genocide. And before he passed away, I promised him that I would do what I can to help raise awareness of the Armenian genocide in the U.S. and beyond as a personal promise to him. He had these incredible stories. When he was in his early 80s, an organization similar to the Shoah Foundation had come and interviewed him about his life experiences. And I had my own video camera running as a testimony, as a witness to his stories. So we were able to get the transcriptions. And so I know a lot about his life, and I've included that within the book as well. And yeah, it's a promise that I made because I felt like it was unfair to him, because here he was living in a country, a democracy, that wasn't properly recognizing his suffering using the word genocide on April 24 every year.
And you write in your book that you and the guys in the band never intentionally set out for System to be an Armenian-American band. So talk about the shared identity that you write had always bound you all together.
Well, that's the thing. You know, we're a band of Armenian-Americans, and when you are something, you don't have to always say it, right? Like, it's part of who you are.
Yeah.
And so we always had this common understanding of our culture, our shared heritage, created this unique bond within the band that no matter what was going on in terms of music, in terms of our own lives, creatively, creative differences, visions going forward, we have and had always this tremendous respect, understanding, and love for each other. I think that's kind of kept us together no matter what.
That's beautiful. So I found this interesting that you describe this pivotal drive home from an LSAT class, which is a law school test, and you decided to turn away from a promising future in business and law.
So I had graduated from Cal State Northridge with a degree in marketing. At the time, I didn't know that music was my calling. In fact, it's during college that I first started playing keyboards as a way of meditating away from my troubles, you know? And after college, I started working with my uncle in the jewelry industry in downtown LA. But after a few years, you know, it was clear that it wasn't my calling, even though I was good at what I was doing. My parents were going through a horrible civil lawsuit. So I was in the midst of a lot of, you know, briefs and talking with lawyers and translating for my parents. So I knew a little bit about civil law. And I thought to myself, well, you know, this jewelry thing is not for me. Maybe I should do law. And I remember driving to Long Beach to take one of those LSAT classes. So they teach you how to take the LSAT so you can take the exam for law school and go to law school. And I hated it. You know, I hated going there and seeing the enthusiasm of all these would-be young wannabe lawyers. And, you know, and at the time I was suffering because of lawyers. My family was suffering, and it was just, hated them, you know. I now have a lot of lawyer friends, but at the time, it was just not a positive thing. And I remember leaving there. It was in the middle of the night because it was like all day of work, then driving across town and then taking the class and then driving home. I was exhausted. I was disgusted with my own self because now I've gone to even further of who I shouldn't be. But it took me going and contemplating the furthest possible remote aspect of who I am not for me to admit to myself who I really am. And so I admitted in the car as I was going home in the rain, very dramatic, I had this epiphany and I said, I don't want to do epiphany law. I want to do music. You know, I literally slammed on the brake and I hit my dashboard and I yelled that out loud to the gods, to the world, whatever you want to call it, to Laurel Canyon. And that day changed my life because then I knew my subconscious finally revealed to my waking consciousness that this is what I need to do to be happy. And then everything changed.
And when you open Serge Tankian's book, Down With The System, there's a wonderful introduction that for me was stunning and startling because I'm learning so much about you that I didn't know, which is just fantastic. But starting out as it does with an early morning phone call with Howard Stern in the introduction and how you wrote that when System of a Down's second album hit number one on the charts, all you remember is being unbelievably stressed out. But then tell us about how the news of System of a Down's album Toxicity hitting number one on the charts was drowned out by a very unexpected event.
It's hard to believe, but in the week of 9/11, the number one Billboard charting band was a band called System of a Down, and the single was called Chop Suey, with the chorus singing, "Trust in my self-righteous suicide. I cry when angels deserve to die." It was almost like, it was pretty crazy, you know? And we immediately got taken off the airwaves by Clear Channel, who also took down Every Rage Against the Machine song, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, you know, by the Beatles. And, you know, anything with the word sky or anything political was taken off the charts. But yet we were still number one that week. And it was incredibly stressful because I wrote an essay called Understanding Oil. I commonly would assess geopolitical events and post them to the band's website. It wasn't anything new. And 9/11 obviously shook all of us, you know, and I was trying to understand how something like this could happen. Now, the essay in retrospect is not very challenging. It talks about multilateralism versus unilateralism in terms of finding those who are responsible. It talks about our unique relationship with Israel and how the Arab world is kind of, you know, angered by that. It talks about us, the United States, geopolitical kind of hand propping up dictators, or at least supporting dictators in the Middle East against the wishes of their own people, and how that keeps, you know, young men economically down, etc. Just things that today would just be common things that you would talk about, right? Politically. But at the time, because there was a lot of anger at what had occurred, there was a lot of emotion. People didn't take it well. So there were death threats against the band. The label pulled down, with my blessing, they pulled down my essay off the website. And Howard Stern wanted me on because someone had read Understanding Oil and had said negative things about it. And so I had to go and defend my words on Howard Stern. I was in Colorado ready to start a tour, which itself was crazy because like 2-3 days after 9/11, we're on the road in front of 20,000-30,000 people. At a time when there are still continuous warnings of terrorist attacks and stuff on TV. And it was just insane. It was like just really stressful. And I remember, although I was able to hold my ground and kind of talk about some of the things I had discussed in the essay, I wasn't very assertive. I wasn't very forthcoming. I wasn't challenging with the narratives. Given the reaction, given the anger, given the frustration and the condemnation, let alone by a would-be immigrant Armenian-American.
And so that's why you wrote in the book that you never felt more like an immigrant and an outsider than you did on that call.
Yeah. I just couldn't believe that in a place like the United States where we're proud of our First Amendment, we're proud of our right to speak, and I couldn't believe that I was kind of forced to hold my tongue about the realities of what was going on, which was important to talk about. At a time like that, I just couldn't believe that that was happening. It didn't feel like America. Yeah. That's what I remember.
So, and that's what gets you hooked on the book. You just read the introduction and you say, wow, if this is the introduction, I got to keep going. And I just want to, again, remind folks that you're listening to KBFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, online for the world at kbfk.org. My name is Maggie LaPique. I am your host for the hour, and my very special guest is Serj Tankian, Grammy Award-winning lead singer of System of a Down. And we are discussing his incredible book, Down with the System, Serj Tankian. It's a memoir of sorts. We're going to take another break, and we're going to choose another pick from Serj. Serj, can you talk a little bit about this recording?
Sure. Empty Walls was my first single from Elect the Dead, my first solo record. And it basically speaks about how we are so desensitized that we are not able to show compassion toward people suffering around the world.
We'll be right back. anxious attention, dismissive apprehension. Don't waste your time on coffins today.
Walls, Serge Tankian. And we're back on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. My name is Maggie LaPique, and my very, very special guest is the amazing musician, artist, activist, and author, Serge Tankian. We were just discussing 9/11, the year 2001. In 2002, what did System decide to do when you discovered bootleg recordings from the Toxicity sessions?
When we recorded Toxicity, I should say that System's only gotten together three times, but we've put out five records. We were always, you know, more prolific than a lot of bands, I guess. So when we recorded Toxicity, we recorded probably about 35, 40 songs. So the rest of the session, whatever we didn't put on Toxicity, ended up as Steal This Album. Now that had leaked. This is early on in the internet where there was a lot of leaking of songs and different websites and picking them up, different torrent websites and stuff. And they weren't finished. The songs weren't finished. So I felt like it's really not fair as an artist for people to hear my song, whether they paid for it or not. That's not finished. You know, it should have an artist's finishing touches on the song. So I convinced the band, and at first they were against it. I said, listen, we've got to finish these songs and put them out properly. Otherwise, it's already out there. And they didn't want for it to be seen as B-sides, because the only reason that Toxicity had the songs it had on it and not the songs from Steal This Album, which were all written at the same time, were because they fit better together. You know, certain songs fit better together than other songs. So finally, we were able to do that, and it was a way of renegotiating with the label and getting a better deal for the band in terms of royalties. Because when we had signed, we were a baby band and no one knew what type of success we were going to have. Now with Toxicity's success, we were able to give them an extra record, renegotiate the contract, and put out Steal This Album. And Darren came up with the great idea of Steal This Album as a tribute to Abbie Hoffman's Steal This Book. And it just kind of really worked. We made a CDR looking cover, and
it's really cool.
Our own unique collector's covers, which was fun. And that's how Steal This Album was born.
Now, why has your life been described as a spiritual journey from darkness toward light?
When I first started playing music, I was in an incredibly dark place. There was a lot going on. My parents were in a lawsuit and their life savings were being dissipated. They were kind of depressed. And as I was graduating high school and trying to go to college, there were all these challenges I had to deal with. I had to grow up pretty quickly. While all my friends were partying, I was kind of just trying to be responsible and help the family as much as I can. Music became kind of like a meditation for me, a way of kind of relaxing my mind away from everything else. It kind of made time frozen for me, and I loved it. And that became the allure until it became my career, you know, and then it became a joy. So the book kind of describes that whole kind of timeline from darkness to light, I guess, you know. Also, you know, when I first started with the band, the music being very aggressive and myself having a lot of angst, the music felt very angry. Everything felt angrier. As time goes by and you live and you learn and you grow and hopefully you evolve, that anger, it's no longer anger. It's many emotions. It's more colorful. It's more interesting, both the music and life itself.
Yes, the anger starts to lift and, you know, evolve into something that can be more productive, not only for yourself, but for everybody around you. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about how and why did you team up with Tom Morello, but I thought it would be interesting if you could read from the book, The First Time I Met Tom Morello.
Okay, here we go. The first time I met Tom Morello, we barely spoke. We were at a New Year's Eve party in 2001 at his house with around 300 other people spread out across the backyard. I was a big fan of Rage Against the Machine and Tom, and I had plenty of friends in common. He'd actually come with Rick Rubin to the Viper Room the very first time Rick saw us play, but I didn't want to impose myself on him at his party. Tom reached out a few months after that party with an idea he wanted to talk to me about. Tom had been to Ozzfest and other heavy music festivals, and was disturbed by what he'd occasionally experienced. Young fans sporting tattoos and t-shirts with racist and fascist slogans. He wanted to see someone or something pushing back against this far-right messaging. He imagined a sort of traveling freedom school, offering a counter-narrative and promoting progressive causes. Tom initially figured Rage could champion this initiative at their shows. There was just one problem. Before he could get this idea off the ground, Rage broke up. When Tom and I began talking, he and Rage's rhythm section had just started rehearsing with Soundgarden frontman Chris Cornell. They were calling their new band Citizen Kane then. They'd eventually rename it Audioslave, and there was talk of them possibly playing Ozzfest the following summer. But the band wasn't ready. His vision needed another public-facing advocate that was already out there. As it turned out, System was playing Ozzfest that summer, and he was hoping I could help get this freedom school and these progressive causes in front of those fans. The more we talked, the more we realized how aligned our larger visions were. Then the wheels started turning. Why limit this sort of activism to Ozzfest? Weren't there a lot of places where we could use our platform for the greater good? These conversations led us to founding a nonprofit, Access of Justice, in 2002.
Yes, a wonderful organization. Does it still exist?
Unfortunately, it does not. We ran Access of Justice for a good dozen or so years. We raised a lot of funds for different charities and a lot of different nonprofits. A lot of incredible musicians joined us in those charity events and concerts. And after a while, Tom and I, you know, we both had busy careers as well as our own causes that we were espousing, you know, so we just kind of didn't continue.
But you're still, both of you, fighting the good fight.
We're still great friends.
And still wonderful friends.
And let's not forget our radio show that we had together on KPFK for many years, the Access of Justice Radio Network.
I was just going to mention that.
Incredible art.
Well, see, that's when I was first introduced to both of you. My background being sort of in a different area of music, you know, jazz. And then one of the most exciting things that I learned about you, because, you know, you guys would come into the KPFK studios way back then to record with Alan Minsky and Ronnie Mickelson.
That's
and
right.
My wonderful engineer, Mark Maxwell. But someone had hit me to this reimagined Charlie Parker album. And I was like, and Serge is on it. And I was like, I thought he was a, you know, I thought he was a heavy metal dude. You know, I listened to it and I was like, this is so awesome. The great Joe Zawinul taught me that because I interviewed him many times, when hip hop artists would sample his music, he was like, this is so cool because it's just leading my music to a new generation. So I think
Joe's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. He was brilliant and I miss him so much. And he passed away, I think it was in 2007 on 9/11. So I thought that's Joe. He's going to make sure you remember. But let's take a listen to your really hip remix of Bird of Paradise, in parentheses, Gone. This is a Serge Tankian remix.
Just a kiss from your lips and I'm gone. Just a smile from your touch and I'm gone. Just a touch from your words makes me whole. Doing, you're piling it all up one by one, pulling from the stars, drinking the teas. Oh, I see what you're doing, you're piling it all up one by one, pulling the eyes, pulling the teas, and crossing them all out.
Just a kiss from your lips, just a smile from your touch and eyes. Me. And the glance from your eyes says, oh.
I see what you're doing. You're piling it all up one by one, pulling from the stars, drinking from the seas.
I see what you're doing. You're piling it up one by one, pulling the stars, pulling the seas, and crossing it all out.
We just heard a Serge Tankian remix of a wonderful collection of Charlie Parker tunes. Serge's tune is Bird of Paradise and Gone. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, so the label that was putting out a reworking of Bird tracks had reached out, I don't know how, and it was probably early 2000 sometime, 2004 maybe, 2003. And I was just, I love Charlie Parker, I love bebop, and I listened to some of the songs that they had sent, and I picked Bird of Paradise to kind of redo in my own way and just kind of chopped up parts of the songs and reimagined it, you know, with other beats and started singing on it and added some guitars, making a chorus out of it, like a would-be pop song, but less traditional than usual. The Gone is one of the lyrics. It's been a while since I've listened to it, but kiss on your lips and I'm gone, you know, and gone is also the type of music. Like if you're a musician, gone means like, you know, free jazz. It means like type of music that is just gone, you know?
Yeah, that's gone.
So I think that's why we called it what I remember.
Yeah. I think of it as, you know, it is kind of a hipster term. Man, that's gone. That's banned.
Exactly. Yeah, that's gone.
You got to say it like, you know, hip.
It's gone, man.
So finally, I wanted to ask you, what would you like readers to take away from your memoir of sorts, Down with the System, and what do you hope they might discover about art and activism?
I'm not sure. Like, it's hard to say what I'd like someone else to take away from it, because we each approach stimuli from our own collective experiences and have different reactions to things, right? But I can say that I happened upon music and the arts accidentally, or it happened to me accidentally in a way. Like most of my peers have known that they wanted to do music from a very young age and that's all they've ever wanted to do and stuff. For me, it was a later experience. And to me, it goes to show that it's never too late to, you know, I'll be cheesy here, but to follow your dream or to find an outlet or to find your own voice. And also, irrespective of the impediments, I think, that life throws on us, if something is your vision, it would be a shame to live a life without it, you know? That's really it for me, but I look forward to hearing other people, what they get out of it. I'm more interested in their reaction than mine.
What are you doing right now? I know you were just not that long ago at the Soroya for a wonderful concert, which the night you were there, I did a lot of promoting of it. It was very
popular.
Oh, yeah. I was so excited about the show because I also just have discovered some of the other things that you do with an orchestra similar to what you did at the Soroya and all of the voices that you use. Not just your own, but, you know, sort of a choir of different voices that I just discovered recently that are just simply gorgeous. Are you writing these suites and arrangements?
So my foray in orchestral music started in New Zealand with the Auckland Philharmonia Orchestra, where I reimagined my first solo record, Elect the Dead, with an orchestra. And we released that as a CD DVD in 2009, if I'm not mistaken. And since then, I've worked with a few dozen orchestras around the world, performing live with them. I've written a symphony called Orca that we released in 2012, a modern piano concerto in 2020. And last year, I released something called Invocations, which is a live show we did at the Soroya Theater with a full choir, an orchestra, ethnic instruments, and five unique voices, including a tenor, an alto, a world singer, myself, and a death metal singer. It's always been a dream of mine to match kind of different voices that don't belong in the same genre together. And so those were pieces that I wrote for it. They're mostly piano-based with strings in terms of instrumentation with some ethnic instruments, very slow and broody, but beautiful and spiritual, evocative. And so that came out last year. We put that out, called Invocations. And I also work on a lot of soundtracks and scores. So I have one coming out on Netflix. It's a docuseries called Hitler and the Nazis, Evil on Trial, directed by a good friend of mine, Joe Berlinger, who I've worked with for years. And I'm finishing another docuseries for him now as well, and two films that I'm currently scoring. As far as jazz, since you're a jazz head, I'll tell you, years ago, I did a jazz record called Jazz is Christ. If you haven't heard it, it's a really cool fusion record. And I did it with a couple of really amazing jazz musicians. My friend Dikran Hamasyan was a phenomenal pianist, and Tom Dupree on trumpet, and Valerie Kulstov from Authentic Light Orchestra, really amazing players. And we made this really colorful fusion jazz record called Jazz is Christ.
I'll definitely look for it.
Yeah, it's cool. But yeah, you know, I'm also doing art. I do a lot of exhibitions. All my paintings are musically scored and seen through an optical recognition app that activates the music. I'm opening up a cafe gallery in Eagle Rock for my coffee line, Kavat Coffee, as well as my artwork, and introduce people to other people's artwork. I've got an EP coming out called Foundations of Rock Music. That's very archival, kind of matching the chronology of the book, with songs from 30 years ago to more recent ones, covering a lot of different ground, kind of as an homage to the book, almost like a companion piece. Many other things as well, but that already sounds like...
I know, that's crazy. You are kind of a Renaissance cat.
Yeah, I'm definitely a cat.
So you're on social media because I follow you, so you're easy to find. Serge Tankian. What about your website? Can folks find you?
Sure. SergeTankian.com. We've got different projects laid out there. But yeah, socials usually are more current.
Wonderful, Serge. It was really great to talk to you about this wonderful book. Thanks so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Have a wonderful day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey man, look at me rocking out. I'm on.
we are back live in studio. My name is Maggie LaPeak. So happy you are with me in this very special, special hour with the wonderful Serge Tankian. And I hope you enjoyed the interview. Gary Baca in studio with me today. Hey, Gary, welcome back to the studios.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. I'm here.
It's wonderful to have you with me to get the phones a-ringing because we have copies of this beautiful book, Down with the System, Serge Tankian, a memoir of sorts, available for your pledge of support. And Serge signed them. And I actually have it on video.
Oh, he's on the radio, too.
He's on the radio. He's on the video.
Right.
And that is System of a Down radio video. Also, in a few moments, I'm going to play a wonderful track that Serge wrote like 20 years ago that just recently was released. It's called AF Day. It's from a forthcoming solo EP, Foundations. The song AF Day, previously unreleased, written over 20 years ago at a very early time in Serge's career. It's on all streaming platforms, but you can watch the video on YouTube. The full EP will be released in the fall. Also, check out KPFK and the Profiles with Maggie LaPeak Instagram pages. There's a wonderful video of Serge and our KPFK and Book Soup Presents, Serge Tankian, his book signing. Just fantastic event. So many wonderful people. The average age was probably, Gary, from 20 to 35. And some parents, like my age. But it was just so wonderful there at Book Soup and to meet so many of Serge Tankian's fans and introduce KPFK to all these wonderful young folks. 818-985-5735 is the number to call. Press 2, get your copy of the signed book from Serge Tankian. It's an instant New York Times bestseller and a Sunday Times bestseller. And I just wanted to read something. Serge Tankian is a demonic, angelic, visionary, and his new memoir, Festo, is pure fire. This book is searing, inspiring, and entertaining as hell. That's Rainn Wilson. This is Tom Morello. My great friend Serge Tankian is not just an influential and groundbreaking musician and singer, but he also has a deep poetic soul which shines through in his songs, his politics, and his personal life. From his thunderous career with System of a Down to his relentless advocacy for human rights, the book reveals the life of a true artist of the people. Finally, what Rick Rubin says is Serge has a way with words. Just listen to System of a Down to find out. Now we get to experience a whole book of his words. And I just agree with what Rick said, what Tom said, and Rainn said. It is so beautiful and it's so poetic. And it will move you to get up, Gary, and stand up. And that's what we're about here at KPFK.
That's right. You know, this book just came out May 14th, only 2 weeks old. And as Maggie mentioned, if you go to the KPFK website or Maggie's Instagram, you'll see that there was a line around the corner for this book. It's a thought-provoking and beautifully written memoir of this musician, songwriter, and lead singer of this Grammy Award-winning band, System of the Down. And the book is called Down with the System. But, you know, Serge has a very unique story. Well, it takes you behind the scenes of his extraordinary life, born to Armenian parents in Beirut. 7-year-old Serge and his family escape Lebanon, civil war, and immigrate to the little Armenian community of Los Angeles, where Serge grows up learning about the brutal genocide of his ancestors while helping his parents adapt to the constraints and contradictions of the American dream. In this, he talks about Howard Stern, he talks about his neighborhood, his parents' history. You learn everything about Serge and his life in this book. So once again, we ask you to go to your phone at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, and get this book. You also find it online at kpfk.org. But we really need your help right now. And as Maggie mentioned, these are all signed by Serge. So you get a signed copy of this book. And if you call now, we'll get it right out to you. We have this book in the house already,
yep.
So we can send it to you right away. 818-985-5735. And this supports KPFK that we exist, that we can stay around and give you the news and views that you need, and also the history of music and the in-depth interviews with the artist, which, I mean, I learned so much from the artist. Like so many times we hear the music, we listen to the music on the radio or a podcast, or we just bring up the music. But to listen to the artist talk about their views and why they came out with the music, the songs, and the reason behind the songs is just incredible. And there's a reason why the group is called System of the Down. And this book, Down with the System, a great read. I've been thumbing through it. I'm already at page 71, chapter 4. So if you're into political rock, you know, you want to hear this and you want to read this, check him out, but check out the book. And that's 818-985-5735, option 2, to get the book, Down with the System, a memoir of sorts.
It's an exhilarating, thoughtful, beautifully written memoir by our wonderful friend, musician, songwriter, lead singer, lyricist of Grammy Award-winning band System of a Down, Serge Tankian. He really cares about this radio station, so he made sure at the book signing, he had hundreds of books to sign, but he signed ours special. We put him to the side. I loaded him up in my car, and yes, they are here for you to call in and get your copy, and then we'll get it right out to you. 818-985-5735. Press 2 to make your donation to KPFK. And I did want to play a little bit, Gary, of this song, AF Day, that was just recently released and it just has shot up the charts, but it's a really fantastic tune. It'll make you, you know, we're sitting in our chairs. We're going to jump up in just a moment.
This will make you go to your phones, right?
That's right.
985-5735. This will inspire you, get you to your cell phone, your computer to donate and pledge to this radio station. 818-985-5735. You know what to do.
Well, I borrowed wind today so I could let my body stay a while. Twice I rode by mistake, for the color of my step seems to dry. The ruby of the north is red, yet it's green for the blind consent of our times. Another day, another day, another day.
It's called AF Day. Serge Tankian wrote it over 20 years ago, being released for the very first time. It is absolutely incredible. Of course, this is the clean version, Gary. You know, I think you can check out the unclean version up on YouTube. You know, it's just, you know, one that needs to be edited for radio. We get that. 818-985-5735. You know, Serge and I have been friends a lot of years, and the two of us talked about 4 years ago about what's happening at Artsakh and Azerbaijan, and we raised some money for an Armenian fund, and it was very successful. He is really, he's the kind of guy you can call and say, we're doing this benefit show, you know, if he can work it into his schedule, which he'll work really hard to do, he is there to help. And as he mentioned, his work with Tom Morello over the years, and Acts of Justice, I mean, they raised millions of dollars throughout the years for charities across the board. He's just a beautiful human being that is kind and thoughtful and really an incredible role model. 818-985-5735. We've only got a few minutes left in the hour, Gary. And if an angel's out there who is having a good year that could give a very large donation to KPFK to say thank you for this wonderful artist, Serge Tankian, and for this radio station to let him speak from the heart and not edit him, because trust me, they're trying to edit Serge all over the place. He was telling me about it at the book signing. 818-985-5735. Press 2 to get your copy of Down With The System. Serge Tankian, a memoir of sorts. It's a hardbound book. It's signed. Personally, I saw him sign him at Book Soup. Just for KPFK, folks. 818-985-5735. Press 2.
And we're looking for our Armenian community out there. We know we have a large Armenian community, so give us a call, 818-985-5735. Get the book as a gift for someone who appreciates it, that somebody will enjoy this book. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. That's the number to call. You know who you are, and get it with us so that way you support our radio station. That way we can keep going on strong.
818-985-5735. Copies of Down With The System, Serge Tankian, a memoir of sorts. We only have a limited number of these, and the calls are starting to come in. Please help us to reach our goal, and we can only do that with your support. People powered means you. I want to thank the incredible work of Andrea Love, Mark Maxwell, Serge Tankian for this beautiful hour. And Gary Baca, I want to thank you for supporting me today and being my cohort in the studio, because, you know, June is also, it's not just a Black Music Month, you know, African-American Music Appreciation Month. It is celebrate, you know, DJ Month. So we celebrate you, Gary.
I just want to thank you for this special that you did. Great music.
Thank you so much. Keep calling. And also want to thank producer Jerry O. But the biggest thanks, as all, always, goes out to you, our listeners, our beautiful listeners, because without you, well, we wouldn't be here. Peace and love. Keep it set to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles.
Aerials in the sky. When you lose small mind, you free your life.
If you don't already know about it, it's really time to discover KPFK. KPFK is community radio from Southern California, powered by people like yourself for over 6 decades now. It's part of the completely unique Pacifica network, and our listeners and sponsors are passionate. We've routinely heard them say things like,
"It is the best source of news that I know of."
The main thing that distinguishes Pacifica from the rest of the media landscape is our funding model, listener sponsorship. It allows us to speak to what really matters in our listeners' lives. Consider becoming a part of this impassioned community by making a pledge today. With your generous continuing support, KPFK is committed to serving the vast and diverse communities of Southern California and beyond. So please, make that pledge now at kpfk.org/donate or call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. Thank you.
Support comes from Art Don't Sleep and Jazz Is Dead, presenting the 9-piece jazz funk collective Ghost Note on June 30th at Lodge Room in Highland Park. Headed by snarky puppy percussion duo, that's Robert Sputt Seawright and Nate Worth, Ghost Note is known for the bold and in-your-face live performances, offering a fresh take on Afrobeat, hip-hop, psychedelia, and more. For more information and tickets, visit jazzisdead.com.